Do you ever want to dive deeper into the Bible, but you just don't know where to begin, or struggle to feel like you even have the time? When you read the Bible, do you get frustrated because you know there is so much more in there, you just have no clue how to get it out? Or maybe you just want to know the Bible better, and you're looking for any resource to help. Well, then this is the podcast for you. Welcome to the Context and Color of the Bible podcast. We are two sisters.
I'm Veronica.
I'm Erica. We love to study the Bible and we love to help others understand it better. When it comes to our own study of Scripture, we have found that in bringing back the context, it actually adds to our understanding. It adds color to the black and white pages of the text. So, Veronica,
yes.
Who knew there was so much in Leviticus to talk about?
Not me.
And actually get excited about.
I know.
And learn from.
I mean,
we say that God does not waste ink, but I feel like you have proven it.
Well, I mean, even to me, it's like there's so much now when I'm hearing sermons, or we had a Passover Seder recently when your husband was speaking, and I go, ooh, that relates back to Leviticus. Ooh, that you could connect that to Leviticus. And it's like, Leviticus really does color the rest of Scripture. And you just go, oh.
It's actually more helpful than we realized.
But part of it, and I will say, it's hard to read these chapters because it just feels like do this, then do this, then it feels very step-by-step instruction manual.
Right.
And so with that, then you have to go, okay, what is the purpose of this instruction manual?
Right.
And then let me apply that. If that's the instruction manual that they've been given, then when I see things in the prophets, they knew better.
Right.
Or they should have been reading their instruction manual to know what was going on and why.
Oh, it makes me appreciate I forget who it is, the king that they find, is it Josiah? They find the instructions.
Mm-hmm,
they think it was Deuteronomy, but it could have been the whole Torah they find. And how horrified they are when they read it to go, look at all we've done. I mean, if God is this specific and you've been ignoring it for maybe a century.
And it tells you what the consequences
are. You can appreciate the horror. Mm-hmm. Like, we really screwed up because God is making it very obvious what he wants.
Right. So with that, let's keep going.
Right. Leviticus 12, I believe.
Made it through a whole chapter last week.
Woohoo!
But Leviticus 12 is actually very short. If you look at it, it's only...
Oh, yeah. It is short.
Like 8 verses, I think.
Yeah.
But Leviticus 12 is about childbirth. Because one thing we have to keep coming back to, I said it last week, I'll say it again. The whole goal is Israel achieving its holiness, its set apartness.
Right.
And so with that death is always contaminating.
Right.
And always seeking to destroy. And by talking about childbirth, by talking about leprosy, you're saying it's not necessarily a sin that has occurred that is causing this. But there's still something that God says, but it needs to be atoned for. Childbirth is not bad. Having the skin disease is not a sin. It's not bad. But it affects your ability to walk into God's presence, to draw near to him.
Right.
And so as you look at that, we're going to see different ways of being considered pure. It can be 40 days, 80 days of being unclean, and then you're pure. It can be 8 days plus 4 sacrifices plus an anointing. It can be 8 days and 2 sacrifices and then 7 days. Or it can be just one kind of purification. So what you get is there's different degrees we talked about last week of impurity. And some of them takes longer just to be considered pure. So as we look at this, the only two bodily fluids that pollute are menstrual blood and semen. Because those have to do with life and death. And we said this a couple weeks ago, that even feces is not considered impure.
It just amazes me.
Because it's essential for life.
Right. I mean, if you didn't, you would die.
Right.
You would
be uncomfortable.
You would.
For a long time. But so interesting that that menstrual blood and that semen, that has to do with life and death. And God goes, you cannot have anything that has to do with death coming into my presence.
Right.
You know? And so, like, blood from a wound or a bloody nose
are fine.
Are fine. They're not, they don't make you impure. So it's not even all blood. It's not even all blood. It's a specific kind of blood.
Which I guess is nice, because if you're accidentally, you know, sacrificing it, oops, my knife slipped, or tripped and fell and skinned my knee.
Heading to the tabernacle and I fell and now I'm
scratched up. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm instantly impure and unclean because of it. No, I'm still fine.
Right. You're just accident prone.
Right.
But so with that, let's talk about childbearing a little bit. You have 40 days the mom's unclean, but for boys, but for girls it's 80 days.
Right.
Which automatically leads you to go, why?
Right, yes.
What's the difference? I made a big point last week saying God doesn't see a God sees a distinction, but male and female are both equal.
Right, right.
Nobody has a good answer for this one.
Right.
There's thoughts out there. Infant mortality rate was high. And a childbearing mom was very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So by declaring her impure, the community protects her and her baby. Huh. And there's thought out there that the girls were weaker and more prone to death than the boys.
They're smaller usually.
Mm-hmm. And just need a little more time. It also gives the mom more time to bond with that baby girl than with the boy, because boys do carry the inheritance, the property.
Right.
It's very much having a boy is good. We're set up for the rest of our lives.
Right.
Where a girl, she's going to go off to another family and join them.
Right.
So this way you give the mom and the daughter more time. But otherwise people really don't know. Can't specifically say why. Just like I said last week with the animals, you cannot say every single animal diet rule had a health issue with it.
Right.
Some of this mystery is just, it's shrouded in mystery.
Right.
We don't know. God said it. That's it. Right. That settles it in a way.
And sometimes I wonder, not that God was willy-nilly, but sometimes I wonder if he leaves it like that to remind us he's God, we're not.
Sure.
And if we could understand mm-hmm. every reason he did everything in the book of Leviticus, mm-hmm. well, that's not an impressive God if I can understand everything.
Right.
It's to me, it makes me feel better mm-hmm. that there are things I don't get because, mm-hmm. okay, he's God.
Mm-hmm.
And this reminds me.
You've got the best.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So the other thought is, and this was interesting. This was Jacob Milgram. He said, because the boy gets circumcised on day 8, his blood is clean and it's symbolic of God's covenant, while the mother's blood was contaminating of symbolic of death. So circumcision removes the male child from the realm of death by shedding his own blood.
Hmm.
And he said other countries did circumcise, but only Israel does it in infancy. And it's a sign of the covenant. So that his blood being shed, covering him, helps shorten his impurity.
Hmm.
But with that, then, is still fascinating. The boys do not become unclean or impure while nursing from the mom. During those days.
That's amazing.
I know. While she's still in her 40 days of impurity, the baby's brought to her. He's not impure.
And he doesn't become impure. Mm-hmm. So the dad can hold him. The family mm-hmm. can hold him. Mm-hmm. The neighbors, people can enjoy him mm-hmm. and not worry about impurity. That's fascinating.
I know. I mean, and there's a couple things like that where, well, this is normally considered impure, but it doesn't contaminate.
So. God is such a good God.
I know.
Because to think as a husband for 40 days, I couldn't touch my baby without, now maybe the purity wouldn't, to make myself pure wouldn't do much, but to still have that, I mean, I can remember.
Not have to worry about it, not have to think about it.
Right. I can remember when I gave birth, my husband was always like, you've known this baby for 9 months.
Yeah.
This is me finally getting a chance to meet this child and get to know this baby.
Mm-hmm. That and if your husband loves babies.
No, he doesn't, though.
Oh, he never liked to share at church.
Well, that was because he didn't want people to get the baby sick. He didn't share with you?
No, it got to the point with Natty where I was like, I want to hold her.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there was a couple times where you said to me, Brian would like to hold the baby during church today. You don't remember that?
I do.
Yeah, he got to the point where
he did like, yes, I forgot about that. He did like holding them. He did. Yeah. I forgot about that. He really, yeah, by the fourth and fifth, he was very comfortable with babies and he wanted them. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he didn't share very well.
No, he didn't.
Just saying.
I forgot about that completely.
I love my brother-in-law, but he doesn't share babies.
So, yeah, so all that to say, how nice for the father,
right,
that he didn't have to worry about that.
And didn't have to think about it.
Right.
Doesn't have to stop and think. Oh. Because truthfully, and that's part of the issue with, which parable is it? The three guys on the road to Damascus.
The Good Samaritan.
Not the road to Damascus. The Good Samaritan. Because the priest and the Levite have laws that go, oh, now I'm impure. Now I'm unclean. How is this going to affect?
Which they were supposed to put saving a life above all those laws.
But there's that moral dilemma of,
I have
to go do this.
Right.
So it takes that away. We have so gotten off track.
Yes, we have.
It takes away from the father and anyone who's helping.
Mm-hmm.
Holding that baby boy, even though he touched the unclean mother, did not contaminate him.
So people are much more willing to help to come in and hold the baby so the mom can sleep. Let's be honest.
Right. I'm trying to think of what else I want to bring up. That
so, yeah, we totally got off track.
But, and I did say this earlier in a couple podcasts ago, but the sin offering is offered not because anything sinful has occurred. She's just impure, and failing to deal with that impurity can arouse God's anger. So you remove the impurity and restore the person to access into the sanctuary.
Right.
The rabbis in traditional Jewish circles... It is the best known explanation appears in the Talmud, in which one rabbi says that the woman must bring a sin offering because she swears never to sleep with her husband again due to the pain of childbirth.
And all the women said, that's true.
I found that kind of comical.
That is very true.
But so with that, that's chapter 12. Chapter 13 and 14 then, again, are together, not because childbirth and leprosy are sinful, but both need atonement, and this is what's linking them together.
Right, and it's a reminder that neither one is sinful by putting them together. Right. Like, you didn't sin and got leprosy. You didn't sin and have a baby.
Right.
It's life. Mm-hmm. And children are a blessing.
Mm-hmm. And in saying leprosy, we don't mean the leprosy.
Right, it's the skin and scale disease, whatever.
But as you get into chapters 13 and 14, now you have another pattern. First, we had A, B, B, A.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have A, B, A, B.
Oh.
We have the leprous garment and then the leprous house. So you have a leprosy of a person and the diagnosis. Then you have leprosy of a garment and a diagnosis. Then you go to leprosy of a person, declaring them clean and the atonement. And then you have leprosy of a house, the diagnosis, the cleansing, and the atonement. And so what I'm trying to do is just give you things to look for as you're reading, to kind of go, okay, chunk these verses together. Chunk those verses together. Right. But it's interesting because the body, the garment, and the house are all given the same diagnostic treatment, according to Mary Douglas. Because the problem is, if you keep that person with leprosy in the community, he will hang with others, and they might not be aware of it, and then they can go to the sanctuary, or they could eat the sacred food and have the consequences and the punishments brought on them unintentionally without their knowledge.
So a person with this diagnosis has to leave the camp.
Yes.
Because he could contaminate, or she could contaminate others.
Yes, because you want to avoid consequences at all cost. Right. And truthfully, if you keep Leviticus 10 in the back of your mind,
Nadab and Abihu,
you know what happens when you approach God in an impure manner.
Right.
And then one thing I did find interesting, you use a wild bird in part of your sacrificing and atoning, because the idea is the wild bird will go out into the natural land where a domesticated bird might come back to the community. You want it going away and not coming back, returning home.
Right.
So you want it to go out into the wild.
Right.
Not come back.
So I'm going to pick a wild bird that is obviously going to go out into the wild.
But with that impure person, he has three rites of passages back into society.
Once he's gotten rid of the impurity.
Mm-hmm. So first, at the end, he comes back to camp. Then the next day, he can come back to his tent. And then the third day, he can come back to God and be a full-fledged member of the community and back to worship. So again, like we keep talking about, there's different stages and ways and degrees of being purified. Jacob Milgram says that you use a live bird, you're using living water, you're using blood and blood-like ingredients. It's a red cedar and a crimson yarn to remind you that this is all a transition from death to life.
Oh.
So even in the things you're using in your purification, you're reminded.
I'm going from death to life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the skin disease doesn't get dealt with, it will easily, it could kill the person.
Right.
That's the thought.
Right.
And the garment that has that disease.
Yes. The garment that's actually, yes. The garment that has the disease, because all of those, let me move in my notes real quick.
Oh, did I throw you?
No, I've just got to figure out where it is. Sorry. Oh, yeah. It's setting us up for chapter 16. But because the body can be, essentially, the goal is to have the body healed and purified.
Right.
The goal is for the garment to be washed and put back into service. The house, you want it to be cleaned again and put back into service.
Right.
Because all of those, if they can't be cleaned and rendered pure, you destroy the garment, you destroy the house, and ultimately, like Eric was saying, the person is destroyed by the disease.
So once they've been made pure, you're reminding them you've come from death to life.
So that's chapters 13 and 14, talking about leprosy. Now chapter 15, genital discharges. But here's the thing. A menstruating woman can make others and objects impure. And so you have to be careful because what she sits on, what she lays on can be made impure. And again, if you touch that and then you go to the tabernacle,
you
are the one who suffers the consequence.
So that woman with the bleeding for 12 years was probably very lonely.
And starved for touch.
Yeah.
Because again, you have this whole, we have this whole thing. Things are common and things are holy, set apart. Things are pure and things are impure. And there's combinations that are okay. It's not sinful to be impure.
Right.
It's not a sin. It's not a bad thing. It just means you can't walk into God's presence. You can't draw near without doing something to deal with that impurity first.
Would you say then it's a sin to bring that impurity into God's presence? That's the sin?
It's a big deal when it's the sacred becoming impure. That's what you don't want. That's why we're going to get to chapter 16, the Day of Atonement, because those sacred set apart things need to not stay contaminated.
Right.
A couple other things, though, as we deal with chapter 15. Sex is defiling only because you don't know if that seed was wasted or if a child will result.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we got to take the time, wait and see. Also, sex can be connected a lot to the idol worship.
Yes.
And again, if the whole point is to be Israel achieving set apartness, holiness, you don't want to look like the other pagan
nations.
Temples and rituals and nations around you.
Which to me just goes back to what we were talking about with those animal urges.
Yep.
Sex would be another one that you can crave and want and just do. And God puts specific boundaries around to say, yes, enjoy this in this way at this time.
Right.
You control it.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. You control it. It doesn't control you.
Right.
Let's see. Sin offerings purify the worshiper because, again, that impurity threatens the purity of the sanctuary of the tabernacle. So you're constantly, you don't want to bring your impurity in with you.
Right.
You want to be caught. You are setting apart, protecting at all costs, the purity of the sanctuary. Which then leads you to chapter 16, the Day of Atonement.
Right.
Because just like you saw the mother having to be cleansed, the leper being cleansed, the person with the genital discharge being cleansed. You see Aaron now needing to be cleansed and staying secluded for 7 days as he goes to purify the whole sanctuary and all of Israel again.
Because sin contaminates and it builds up and you've got to deal with the junk.
Mm-hmm. Because like we said, all of those destroy. You destroy the garment. You destroy the house that's not purified. Right. You don't want to destroy the tabernacle.
Right.
That one, you've got to stop it from getting to the point where it needs to be destroyed.
Right.
Because that would eventually lead to the curses of chapter 26.
Right.
And so what you do is you have one day a year where everything and everyone gets purified again, just because, you know what?
Life.
Yes.
Life
and God
happens.
And what I love is God goes, I know it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I know this is the inevitable. So let's take care of it before it gets too bad.
Right. Before it builds up and I have to vomit mm-hmm. you out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm. Deal with it now.
Right.
Before it gets too bad. I mean, just to me, it's like this is God being gracious and compassionate going, I know reality. Mm-hmm. I know sin is present. Mm-hmm. And I know death is around and contaminates.
Right.
But I still want to be with you.
Right.
So let me make sure we can do that.
Right.
And maybe not everyone's been able to come. Maybe not everyone's been here. Let's make sure we just take care of it.
Right.
Every year, set aside this day to do it and be reminded.
Right.
In a way you just go, well, I mean, just the celebration in a way that comes after the Day of Atonement.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and we've got a whole series on the seven feasts from Leviticus 23. We do. We've done.
On YouTube?
On the podcast.
Oh, we have?
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
Way back in the beginning.
Huh.
But again, the idea is.
We should probably redo those now.
I know. Now that we know so much more.
Now that we've
learned
a lot.
But you have the head of the new year. Mm-hmm. And then you've got those 10 days of awe where everyone is going around.
Right. Making things right
in preparation of the Day of Atonement. So on the Day of Atonement.
It can be atoned.
It's all good. We can walk away and go, whew, it's been covered by the blood. It's been dealt with. We have a fresh start again of drawing near to God and not having to live in fear and worry what happens if that purity, that holiness breaks out.
Right.
So you have, because truthfully, the sanctuary cannot be left impure. It cannot be left contaminated.
It's God's dwelling place.
It's God's dwelling place. It must be dealt with. And if he's habitate, I mean, it's God's manifest physical presence in a way. Manifestation on earth in a way you don't get outside of the tabernacle in the temple.
Right.
You've got to deal with it.
Right.
And so Leviticus 16 then is all about here's how to deal with it. Here's what you're going to do. Here's who's going to do it. Because really, if you look at the beginning of 16, the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron. In a way, you could take out chapters 11 through 15 and just continue the storyline. Chapters 10, they died. And then the Lord says to Moses in 16,
let's clean it up.
Let's deal with this. And so it's chronologically, they might be better to put 10 with 16. So you keep the flow. But you also got to go, okay, what's going to contaminate? What do we need to worry about? What do we need to make sure doesn't make its way into the sanctuary? So we have this happen again.
I feel like a lot less contaminates than I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, to have you say, I don't remember if it was this podcast or last one, that these are the only two fluids and the only two medical issues. Mm-hmm. So much of normal life can happen without contamination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the whole point is, it's just, this is not everyday life. This is just when I'm going to the tabernacle.
Right.
You know, so I'm aware. It's, again, go back to my illustration of, we all know the TSA regulations when I'm going to fly.
Right.
It doesn't affect my day-to-day life until I'm heading to.
Right. And then I start to think, okay, what do I need to do? Which would get you in the mood, get you excited, get you prepared. Right. Like, okay, I have to take some time. I can't just walk into God's presence willy-nilly.
Right.
I need to take the time to prepare myself, to make sure I'm in a
ready
to walk in, that I'm in a pure state. And that is something today as believers we often miss.
Because Jacob Milgram says the high priest feels trepidation, not because of the impurity that has been implanted there, but because of the holiness of the ark. You're not so much worried about this impurity. It's I'm going to stand in front of God's presence.
Right.
His uniqueness, his otherness.
Right.
That's what I'm going to make sure I'm ready for. I'm prepared for. which is just fascinating to me.
We've lost that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Karen Hannah Pryor says this takes place at the this takes place at the holiest place on earth,
mm-hmm.
on the holiest day of the year, mm-hmm. conducted by the high priest, mm-hmm. the holiest God-appointed man. And the deaths of Nadab and Abihu are a reminder that this is serious business because they just walked into the holy place. How much more then for the person walking into the Holy of
the
Holies.
The Holy of Holies.
Which then sets us all up for chapter 17, which I'm not going to get into today because you can't really have 17 without understanding 18, 19, and 20.
Sheesh.
I know. I mean, what I keep seeing with Leviticus is there actually is a flow and an organization to how this all comes out.
You mean it was put together with forethought and purpose and reason. It wasn't just a mishmash.
No, but this is, truthfully, this is where the nerd in me comes out because this gets me excited.
The organization?
Yes. Because in my mind, in my visual mind, I can now go, okay, I get it. Well, and I can tell you this without even looking at notes. 1-7 is about sacrifice, offerings and sacrifices. 8-10 is consecrating the priests and what happens. 11-15 is what makes you impure. 16 then is the day we're dealing, the big day we're dealing with all the impurity. And that's what I can tell you for now.
Good job. I can testify. She did not look at her notes once.
But hopefully what you're finding is Leviticus actually is exciting.
Yeah, there's a whole lot more there.
There is. But if you just look at it and just go, it's a list of do's and don'ts.
Right.
We miss the deeper.
But if you look at it as God's teaching, God's instruction, how to walk out this relationship with God, why, how to be holy like he is holy, there's a lot more in there that we can draw out.
Right. And you just go, okay. And it keeps coming back to Exodus.
Right.
You know, God says you're supposed to be a kingdom of priests. Here's how you would have looked. Now you're a kingdom with priests. But that didn't let everybody else off the hook. You still have a job to do, which then you go to the prophets. Israel is to be a light to the nations.
Right.
How do you be a light? You have to look different.
Right.
In every area of your life. And Leviticus says, you're different in your food and you're different in your worship of me. And I'm different from everyone else. And I want you to come into my presence regularly.
But because I'm God, there has to be ways to do it. Mm-hmm. And I get to set up how.
Mm-hmm.
You're all equal when you come, but I'm God.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you how to do it so you are safe and you're protected.
Right.
I mean, there's no guessing. There's no, is he in a good mood? Yes. Is he in a bad mood? God lays it out very clearly.
Is this what this God wants or what does that God want? Or did I offend this one?
So, so that's it. Come back next week.
As we find out, finally, 17, 18, and 19.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's one episode or two. We'll see. But don't forget, we do have social media.
Yep.
If you want to jump on our Facebook page, we're on Instagram. Because I am visual, I do make graphics. You can see most of them on Facebook and Instagram, but not all of them. So if you want to see all of them,
go to
Pinterest.
Oh, right.
And as always, we have our website where some of the worksheets and different handouts I've made to help go along with this, you can download those from our website. So,
alrighty.
Thanks for joining us and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.